This is exactly right.
Karen, have you heard of Handsome? It's a new podcast from the brilliant comedians Tig Notaro, Fortune Feimster, and Mae Martin.
I have heard of it. People love it. Every week, this handsome trio of hosts takes a question from a famous friend, people like Stephen Colbert, Reese Witherspoon, Jamila Jamil, the Indigo Girls, and then they do their best to answer that question with plenty of hilarious detours along the way.
You're going to love hanging out with Tig, Fortune, and Mae every week, so go check out Handsome wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Listen to a new episode of Handsome every Tuesday.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, my friend Karen Kilgariff.
Hi, Chris Fairbanks.
I have a story to tell you, surprisingly.
Let's hear it.
I think I just am going to go into it.
Great. I'm ready.
Okay, good. Brace yourself.
All right.
I was driving today, and at a light, this guy shuffled into the middle of the walkway or the crosswalk in front of all the line. I'm like, and then he stopped and he was limping. And then all of a sudden, he pulled kind of a Willy Wonka where he's like, look at me, I'm limping. No, I'm not. And he started juggling, but he juggled. And I didn't look to see if this is like a world record, but it was seven balls, super high above his head. And he was doing like leg kick. He was like hacky sacking it back into his hand. He was the best juggler I've ever seen. And he knew, he's been doing it in the intersection so long. He knew, he didn't look up to see that the light was green. He stopped, did a bow. And so he didn't even ask for money. He just did the most amazing juggling. If you ask me if I care about juggling, it's like magic or something. I say I don't. And then when you see someone that's amazing at it, I almost started crying. And that's what I saw.
Because you know what? I think the crying part is because it wasn't just, it's not like juggling itself would move you, but that man knows everyone is on the razor's edge of losing their minds right now.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know what? I'm going to go out. I'm going to take to the streets and I'm going to remind people of human magic. And that'll just be my volunteering for the day.
And on top of that, I, of course, was thinking, what is his background to be that good? Was he in Cirque du Soleil or some other circus? I'm sure he did it for a living at some point. Seven balls is nothing to sneeze at, but it is something to write home about.
I was trying to imagine what's the standard amount of balls, which I guess opener amount is three.
Yeah.
Right? That's when you're like in the kitchen trying to be kind of fun and sexy at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, hey, look what I can do.
The erotic three, they call it.
The erotic apple juggler. But then incorporating four more, that's a lot.
Yeah. Like, Tommy Drake, this guy in Houston that used to be a comic and juggler at the same time, he'd like open for Cher, and then he did family-friendly versions of his joke as he juggled swords and knives at Six Flags. Anyway, he did five knives, and that was like a record. Like, he was the best at... So, seven balls has to be something. Can someone do eight? And this guy...
You know what I'm thinking of is like all of the grammar school art that my teachers had on the wall, where like there would be a clown with all the balls that had children's names inside or something. And it's like that was probably 25 in a standard classroom. I'm just trying to compare, contrast.
Yeah.
I don't really have a lot of juggling background myself.
Right. But it's a good comparison because everyone in traffic turned to a little kid and they all were in a good mood. And I wanted to pull over, but what am I going to say? Hey, you're good at that. Here's a dollar. I'm going to insult you.
He's like, sir, get away. I'm an artist.
Yeah.
Stop harassing me.
Yeah. He just snubs me and doesn't make eye contact. I'm like, oh,
God. He pretends he didn't do it.
I feel like I'm at a comedy party again.
You know who absolutely will know how many balls is the juggling limit is our guest today.
Yeah, sure. I was going to say, he'll know. He used to juggle and do magic.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's true, but I do know.
He's from the Pacific Northwest. That's where all that stuff
He brought that was rain
born.
That we're experiencing down from Seattle, everybody.
sorry, guys. That was me.
You've seen him at clubs and colleges. He's hilarious. He does a lot of colleges. Put your ears together for Fahim Anwar.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, Fahim.
I love the boilerplate clubs and colleges. Like, crowds are just wowed. Like, oh my God, honey, this guy does clubs and colleges.
Yeah.
He does
versatile.
It all.
Educated children. Can you imagine that audience?
You know, I throw in a third credit. I say clubs and colleges and then throw in corporate events from time to time. So they're like, whoa, we can work corporate clean?
Yeah.
Because there might be some executives in the crowd.
That's right.
Because I'm advertising when I'm up there too.
Right. I treat every set like a LinkedIn profile.
Have to.
Yeah. That's when your career really starts to skyrocket. Like I used to do things that I thought were funny. But now I just treat it like, you know, yeah, like you said, a LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
I open my set by saying I'm here to network. And then I hand out cards to the front row.
Let's keep the laughing at a minimum because this is business.
Yeah, this is business, guys. You can't hear my strengths.
It's funny, though, because we are supposed to do some level of that. When I was young and opening for comics, I remember Mike Birbiglia and like Dane Cook actually putting down paperwork and gathering it in a bag at the end, like a email list. And then they go home and tell everyone, thank you for coming to the show. And that was something I still don't, that's so far removed from my brain. But yeah
it's such a necessary, thing, you know. That's what separates a lot of people, like someone who's like Kevin Hart or someone who's like very funny, but you'll never know who they are. Or I have a, you know, it's hard to get to that level without having like open mic or energy, no matter what level you're at. It's crazy. Like it never ends.
Yeah. I'm still going to lie to myself and say it's about joke quality.
Yes.
That's sad.
That's all.
That's not true.
It took me a long time to realize that lesson. I'm like, being good and people caring are they're like independent of each other. They have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you are one of my favorite you do a very like every joke you do, it's that situation where it's like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that before? Like your bit about trying to meet up with someone that's on the move or they're going to a different club. Like I think everyone has thought that is the most frustrating thing ever, but no one has done a joke about it as far as I know. And your whole act is like a bunch of relatable scenarios. And it's so great. I just watched your special, your hat trick special. And
oh, cool.
So many things in that were like, God, I've thought of that except for the joke part. I'd just like,
know, that's just great comedy. You know, you just say what we're all thinking, but haven't put it into words yet.
I mean, it is truly. That is actually the formula, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, there are people who have jokes and you're like, yes. You know what I mean? Like, they just cracked it a certain way. And I think that's the difference between like stand-ups and people who just have regular jobs is everyone has these thoughts. But I think like, you know, the art of doing stand-up is just drilling down to the minutiae and like taking a feeling into like a thought for an audience or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen you do it many times and I love it.
Thanks, man. Ditto. Yeah. I'm a fan too. That's cool. You saw the special. Thanks, dude.
Yeah. It was great.
You know, it's available on YouTube, so it's on my YouTube channel.
Fahim Anwar. I watched your two late night sets because our producer Annalise sends us a little thing of like, we know what's going on with this guy.
And that's nice. That's more than most general meetings you go on, you know? Like your people will be like, hey, so-and-so at Sony wants to meet you. You go, oh, great. And you get in the chair and they have this like look of like, who the fuck is this guy? And you go, oh, this is just a stand-up show in an armchair that I have to do.
Yeah.
For one dry man who doesn't care.
Dry man doesn't know who you are or why you're here. He filled the calendar. He's just dotting his I's and crossing his T's so that if you get famous, he won't get fired because he'll be like, I met with him.
Great guy. Loved his stuff. Loved his chair stuff.
He was very well hydrated. We took care of him. Two bottles of water.
And a Diet Coke. I remember having that realization going on meetings, and they do, like, your representation always words it like they want you for this part. They want to meet you. And it's completely not true. And it was like probably year three of living here where I was like, wait a second. These people are being paid a lot of money to meet with people all day long. They don't want to meet with me. They don't care about me. They don't, they're probably being told. Like, it was such a sad, like, oh, I'm being lied to on like every level.
Every level. It's
hilarious.
Yeah. And the last one I did, and it had been years since I had like a general meeting, never over Zoom. They were, after 7 to 10 minutes, they're both like, well, I got to go. I got another thing. And I was all prepared to, we hadn't even gotten to my ideas or thoughts about anything.
It was funny. You had like an easel on the other side of the door, like ready to. A friend is going to come in with your pitch for Jurassic Park, the reboot.
Turns out that pitch was softer than I thought.
It's not dinosaurs, it's frogs. Are you ready? Wait, hold on.
Are you ready?
Leave meeting now.
I mean, Zoom has really made it great for pointless meetings, though. All you got to do is crack open a laptop and be like, oh, this is fun, guys. Bye. No traffic, no parking. It's great. Oh, the pandemic. Perfect.
Yeah. Isn't it great?
For real. The sweat that I would build between putting on makeup in my car and walking across the like 6 football fields of parking lots in all of the studios around town. We're just like, what am I doing? Why would I do this? This is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of nice. I mean, look, the pandemic was a terrible thing, but I think what has come on the other side of it is people really valuing their time.
Yeah.
It's like pre-pandemic, no one gave a fuck about their time. It was crazy how much we were just giving for point, like things that could have been phone calls, things that could have been Zooms, auditions. I did a callback for this like NBC show via Zoom. That's like, that's like a big thing that they're doing over Zoom. Whereas before, you would go to a pre-read, you would go to the actual audition, you would go to the callback with producers, you would go to a studio test, you would go to producer, like, so
the tension.
Much.
I mean, was it? Do you think it was easier to do a callback on Zoom than if you were in the room?
Well, the thing is, like, I am a stand-up who visits these Hollywood things, like, stand-up's my main thing, so I love it because I'm not... My entire being isn't wrapped up in like, I hope I get this part.
Right.
So I love the value of time, like, and that feeling of nervousness. I'm in my home. It's so minimal. Like maybe when I crack open my laptop for like 2 minutes or 5 minutes, it might be butterfly. But when you have an audition, it's like you're in traffic, getting ready, you know, in the shower, the whole ritual. It's like half your day is just, you're a knots.
Yeah. And being in a room and being judged in some way, there's this power dynamic that kind of doesn't exist over Zoom.
Yes.
And
from that's so funny.
It's like,
that'd be great if they still
try, equal.
If they still tried to mind fuck you via Zoom.
Yeah.
They're like, can you go downstairs and just fidget on your sofa for 30 minutes and then come back up?
Yeah. Or they try and make their monitor slightly bigger. They have like a design guy.
He just puts a crown. He puts a crown on.
It's good to be here. Don't mind this staff I'm holding.
He changes his background to a cloud. That's right, motherfucker. I'm God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've said this before when that was happening and I was like, I can't believe I'm doing stand-up into a silent abyss over Zoom. And then I went, turned on TV and Stephen Colbert is struggling through a monologue over Zoom. And I realized, oh, we're all the same. Look at this human with no power, and all my gray hair went away. I had gray hair come on the sides here. It's kind of come back now that we're all thriving again. Yes. It was such a weight off my shoulders.
Oh, it was great. Like it was pretty interesting. Just like the smoke and mirrors of gloss. Once the pandemic happened, everyone was a YouTuber.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Trevor Noah, Jimmy, like vloggers had an edge up on them because that's what they've been doing their whole lives. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they had to come down and like these people were at that level all the time. It was interesting.
Yeah. We still haven't kind of pulled out of that.
Yeah. Like late night's fun. It's cool. But like, I feel like after the pandemic, it feels less relevant. It was already kind of on a decline, but when you got to see, it's like you got to see late night with no makeup on when the pandemic happened, right?
Yeah.
So now it feels kind of like a relic of the 50s or something. Or
there was also up north, I was at my sister's house and they were doing the news, but they were all from home. So there was like the weatherman was like had a weird green screen in his living room. And it was my favorite. I think he had a cat that kept walking through or something. But I was just like, it was so fascinating to watch where I was like, hey, first of all, it's not my problem. Like, I don't have to feel any of that tension of like, what are we going to do? How are we going to get this done? I was just like, oh, thank God. I do podcasting. I don't have to worry about any of this stuff anymore.
That's awesome.
But then the idea of like, wait, this is better. Like the way things have gotten to this point where it's like, what we like is a bunch of people fake applauding and fake laughing. What we like is this. It's like, no, we don't. Like what people like is seven balls being juggled in the crosswalk.
Like, God, I liked it.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's real.
It's real, goddamn it. Yeah. It's in the streets.
You get a honk, you earn that honk. There's no sign that says honk now from a producer.
Yeah, maybe that's why I like those drive-in shows. You think someone tells you that they're going to honk at you. I was like, oh, that's going to be terrifying. A honk only means
bad.
Get out of the way. I want to kill you. And I've never, a symphony of honks is like my favorite.
Yo, what if you're still like conditioned from the pandemic, these comedy shows though, you're in like the 405, people are honking. You're like, I crushed.
Yeah.
These guys love me.
Yeah. They're honking because it's green and you won't drive. And you're just like, thank you. I'll be here all week. And you just sit there till Wednesday.
You're familiar with my work.
You're from Seattle, right?
I am, yeah.
Did we talk last time about working at Boeing and
maybe. Well, the thing is, like, I went to UW, University of Washington, got my engineering degree there.
They're Huskies, right?
Mechanical, if you guys were wondering.
Mechanical engineering. I was going to ask.
Mechanical.
Not kitchen appliances. The big stuff.
The big stuff.
Not
planes,
civil.
Cars. robot dogs.
That kill you.
Yeah. So then I got a job in Long Beach because I just applied to jobs in Southern California because I knew I wanted to do this. So you got to go to New York or LA. And I'm a West Coast kid. My family's still in Seattle. So I was like, I'll just apply to.
So you knew right away after you did all the post-grad work, you're like, how do I also do stand-up? Were you struggling with that?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like a very methodical, premeditated plan. I mean, I was doing stand-up when I was 18. Like when I graduated high school,
okay,
I was just going to the I was going to the Comedy Underground and Giggles a lot through the summer.
No laughs in Kirkland?
Well, it wasn't built yet. I love them. Dave and Angela.
Yeah, yeah.
Their first comedy club was like part of the Ramada Inn in the lobby.
And nice.
I used to go there all the time, like Friday and Saturday. They would give me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I was going to college and I couldn't. My parents were a little strict. Like, I couldn't do comedy through the middle of the week. So,
okay.
But Friday and Saturday, they would give me 20 minutes. So, that was kind of like my home club, this Ramada Inn.
Wow. Nice.
Laughs. Yeah, yeah. But it was good. It was a good crowd.
Yeah,
despite
they're
what it sounds.
One of the first clubs that said, hey, we're going to take a chance on you because of a video we saw or something. And that was one of the first times that happened.
Oh, yeah. They're great. I think I'm going to do it sometime this summer. Because they were in Kirkland, and then now they're where Giggles used to be in the University District.
And
so
it's good.
I've
been there. It was fun.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Is Giggles the one with a brick wall? Like a brick, it's a brick corner?
Is that
it is a corner. Yes. Maybe it used to be brick. Yeah, they changed
it. That might be my memory laying on a comedy club brick element that wasn't actually there. It was just a corner.
That'd be funny. You're on the road so long, you can just blindfoldedly lean against a brick wall and you can say what club it is.
3x5 inches. It's good to be back in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's so rare because you had a good job that you worked hard to become a, is it aeronautics? Sure. Aerospace engineer?
Aerospace engineer.
I mean, that word is like, you've.
It sounds cool, I guess.
Yeah.
People will be like, you, like rocket scientist or something. I go, nah, I stay in the atmosphere, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just aerospace.
You give me too much credit. Yeah, it's just aerospace.
Yeah.
But you did have to use a protractor, right? That was it.
I wish.
No?
No.
Just numbers?
Yes, it's just the computer work, really.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it gets so niche. You're not even like, you could, I mean, this may be hyperbole, but I feel like you could teach a high school kid who to do any job, really, because it gets so specialized.
Yeah.
Once you get into the field, it's repetitive and you use the same software.
Yeah. What were you working on?
I feel like I was smarter in college.
The last thing you were working on, do you remember? Like, was it a hatch door or a window?
Like, no, what? Okay. The whole time I was there, I'm trying to think. It was like the floor beams for.
Okay.
The 747-8 freighter, which is like UPS and all that, and then passenger, which is like ones we fly, you know, people.
So you want to have a solid divide between the passengers and the luggage. That's the first.
Well,
that's
just
important.
The loads are different, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the load cases you get. But I mean, it's very unglamorous. You tell someone, like, I worked on the floor beams, so
yeah.
When you walk to your seat, you're welcome. The reason you don't fall through the floor is me.
Yeah.
And they're like clicking off the Zoom. Oh, I didn't. I thought it was outer space. Bye-bye.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever have to do equations on a gigantic chalkboard?
Yeah.
No. But that'd be great just to feel like I'm in a beautiful mind or something.
Yeah.
It's very simple. You don't need to do this.
Yeah. Write equations in front of a bunch of drunk college kids from Boston.
Yeah,
and I go,
how you like dem apples?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if anyone tries to use that quote nowadays, but everyone's too young, so they're like, what are you talking about?
What apples?
I want to do a joke like I like going on dates with like girls in their early 20s and just do movie quotes from the 90s.
Yeah.
So I'll just be like, somebody stop me. Or do I make you horny, baby? Do I? And she'll just be like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on?
She's dialing 911 next to
you.
Or you're on a date with someone that's never, ever seen a movie. They were like, they grew up in a very religious commune and they just think you're a genius. Everything he says, it's always in a different voice. But it's so funny.
He's quoting Ace Ventura and they think that you're some savant. That is so weird. You ever meet those people? Yeah, like you're saying, who are like very religious, or we didn't watch movies growing up. And it's like they're Encino Man or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You have no cultural touchstones with them.
Speaking of Encino Man, when you guys close your eyes... Do you just, I can't get rid of the vision of Brendan Fraser crying. That's all.
In Encino Man?
I've seen him cry so much lately. No, more grown up Brendan Fraser.
Sure, sure.
Him and Hui Kwan, what's his name?
They were both in Encino Man. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I saw that screen grab of them in Encino Man. Like, both are Oscar winners now.
Yeah, yeah. It is really cool. And it does make me cry, too. It's just, there's a lot of crying. And I'm, I cry. I wake up crying.
Hey, you're a big crier.
I love to cry.
But, man, a lot of crying.
Well, when you look at his career and the trajectory,
yeah.
You think you're out, and then there's this outpouring of support, and then you win the biggest. It's got to be emotional.
It is cool. Yeah.
And
for both of them.
Yeah.
That standing ovation Brendan Fraser got in Cannes, it was like a 10-minute standing ovation or whatever, where it's like, that's how he came back after being gone for 15 years or something.
Yeah. All had just watched The Whale and then freaked out and he didn't know if anyone would even like it.
Exactly.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Well, that director's pretty big, though. Isn't it like Aronofsky or whatever?
Yeah, Darren? Yeah.
So, it's not really a roll of the dice. Like, if you're in a Spielberg film and you're like, I hope people like it.
Yeah.
Will
Fingers
it be
crossed.
Good? Yeah. I'm in this Tarantino movie. I hope it's good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I did this bit at the improv one time because, like, I always read every year. It's always like so and so gets Dune gets 7 minutes standing ovation, or The Whale gets, and everyone just accepts it. I want to be like, do you know how fucking long 7 minutes is? Oh,
yeah.
I go, that's bizarre. Yeah. I go, let's do an experiment. Let's pretend my film just got done screening and you guys start clapping, all right? So I did it at the Hollywood Improv. I go, okay, my film just got done screening. They all start clapping. And I stand up there and I'm very gracious and I'm trying to act natural while the applause are coming. It gets weird after 30 seconds. And like, the audience can feel how weird it is. And I go, 45 seconds, everybody, 45. And I try to go for as long as they will, but like, the crowds never go past a minute. They get tired.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you really got to will yourself to do 7, 8, your hands are getting bloody.
There's just no way anyone means it by minute, like 7. There's no way.
Correct. It's almost like the perfect microcosm for Hollywood. Just the artifice, the bullshit, the veneer, like clapping. It's so performative. Yeah. Like 10
I
want to
work with Aronofsky too. Clap, clap, clap. Like, they're probably all filmmakers in the audience.
I wonder if there's one guy who's in a suit and a tie during Con, you know, and then he, like, sits down after 3 minutes and everyone's just giving him the stink eye and he gets fired from whatever, yeah, whatever studio.
Gotta play ball. Jerry, we saw you. You're out.
You couldn't stand for 10 minutes. Brendan saw that. He's upset.
That's why he's crying again.
Yeah, he's not going to do The Whale 2 now.
I was laughing because the two guys that did Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is an amazing movie, and they deserve they deserve those prizes.
Yeah.
But after your fifth speech, go up there, grab it, and run. Like, do the thing everyone wants you to do, which is zip it and go. Not like, I just thought of one more thing. My teacher, I forgot my teacher. Where it's they did it every time. Or it's just like, no. You were welcome the first 3 or 4 times. Now get out for real.
It's almost like emceeing. You know, I never did it a ton, but whenever I did MC, I would do my time up top and then I would just introduce people. I'm not trying to do time in between.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's times I've enjoyed that, but if anyone does time before me or after me, I take it as this guy just ate it, so let me do a joke.
That's a good point. You're like, oh, this guy's trying to palate cleanse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the coffee beans at the fragrance counter.
Or they do a little crowd work that then they eat it as the MC, where you're just like, no, we can't go down any further. You have to only go up. You can't do that.
It's almost like seeing The Matrix, because sometimes they're like younger comedians and don't know. And like, you know the most they can get as an MC during this show. And then you're like, oh no, they're doing bits. Like,
yeah,
I know they want it to go, but it's like impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like, you should just bring someone up.
Yeah, it's funny we're talking about that, because every time I've seen it, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And I know that I've done it. I got to be professional. I maybe it's not very professional. Just go up. Hey, that was great. Here's the next comic. I shouldn't do that. I don't know why I forget.
I love doing that. You know, my new mantra is I want to do the least amount of work to get the most amount of money. Honestly.
That's like new? It's new for you? You've never thought of that before?
Well, here's the thing. Because I think when you're younger, you get glitz and glam. Like, oh, yeah, it'd be cool to be an actor on some CW show. Whereas, like, you might make more just doing stand-up. Or you might make more writing a show. Mm-hmm. So all these, like, jingly Hollywood things, like, okay. But now that you're older, you realize the time suck of all these quote unquote cool things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're in a trailer in Vancouver for like 6 months to be on a show. People watch when they're on their treadmill at the gym.
Yeah.
Whereas you can like be in LA and maybe sell a script or something. So you start seeing The Matrix that way. Like,
yeah.
Oh, maybe that's not as cool.
Acting is so much harder. I mean, well, Chris might disagree. And I think it's just I had this idea of what it was in my head, where it's like, no, I like stand-up because I'm in charge. I write it. I decide. I leave when I want. All that stuff.
Everything you put into it, you get out of it.
Yeah.
Whereas auditions, it's like, okay, you have to memorize 3-4 scenes. You're spending 2-3 days. You're running it with somebody else. You drive, or you used to, whatever. You do the audition. You don't get it. All that work just evaporated.
And also, you retain the memory of the scenes. Like, have you ever had that where, like, I've done things where I've memorized it. It kind of didn't make sense. I wasn't the biggest fan. And for years afterwards, I could do that scene if people walked up and cued me.
Yeah.
Because it became kind of a traumatic failure memory where I was just like, ugh, I didn't get that.
Yeah, that'd be great if you did like a one-woman show and you're just dumping all the memories of the auditions you never got, and you just kind of, it's like your synapses are firing, yeah. And you used to do a commercial for Imodium AD, and then you do a scene from some sitcom.
It's like snarky best friend, slutty best friend, man-hungry best friend. Yeah. It's just like every single possible scene I've ever
done. But only the traumatic ones, because those only trauma puts it in your memory forever. All the fun stuff, you don't remember that.
You know what's funny is, like, I think maybe this is 5 years, 6 years ago, Hollywood, they were doubling up on a diversity role. I was seeing so many roles for, like, a gay Indian. There were so many just auditions for, like, the character is a gay and he's gay and he's Indian. It was just funny how they were doubling up on the roles. Like, they wanted two diversities.
Yeah. Just so they can get them. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see the meeting about that. Hey, this guy's a... They probably have a word for it. This guy's a 2-for-1.
Well, I think they write what they want to write, and then they kind of see what comes down from the top, right. And they go, okay, all right, well, we need two. We don't have two roles. Let's have Raj be gay.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's a long way from 90s auditions where, no joke, I think I auditioned two different times for sitcoms where a woman falls in love with a talking dog. No joke. There's a talking dog that then the arc becomes there's romantic feelings about the dog. I swear to God, the first time I saw it, I was like, this is a joke script. This is fake. There's no way this is real. And if I was going in as the man-hungry best friend of the girl that discovers her dog can talk, and then is kind of like, I don't know, we really get along. It's kind of great.
I mean, is the audience rooting for this dog to fuck this chick? I mean, what's going on here?
No, I don't think anyone knew what they were rooting for in the 90s. It was like such a difficult time for all of us.
To think back that there was a show called Small Wonder about a robot girl that said the darndest things. I really think we've evolved as humans over the last, maybe in
for
a lot
sure.
of ways, not for the best. Oh. But
you know, I guess we didn't realize what a golden age we were in terms of just being a creative and pitching. Like, what was acceptable?
Yeah.
Didn't have to be in the realm of reality. You probably didn't even have to have a pitch deck.
Yeah.
You just like went in there and you go, yeah, it's about a robot girl.
Look out the window, there's a dog. Dog, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Or like Alf, you know? Someone went in there and just went, yeah, he's like a furry alien guy. Yeah. And
good
the
enough,
family.
Let's do more cocaine.
Well, totally. Literally, the Alf guy was on heroin. That's the best part of that story.
What?
Like, what's that movie? Permanent Midnight with Ben Stiller?
Oh, sure.
It's about the guy that, I don't think he was a showrunner. I think he was a writer on Alf.
Oh, okay.
And he just basically was kind of like lightly on heroin in the beginning and then basically had his downfall as the more successful he became because of that show.
He started turning more and more into Alf.
Yeah. He himself was becoming Alf, actually.
Oh, wow.
That'd be a funny true Hollywood story. Just like Alf is getting gacked out of his mind. Just with all the success, he's going to nightclubs. He's going to Studio 54.
Then he's driving around downtown trying to score. Yeah. It's like Alf just drove by.
He wrecked his car. He's like, that's when it got real. Yeah. He's on life support.
That's when I started wanting to eat cats. That was one of his character traits, is that he wanted to eat cats. I thought that one just kind of flew under the radar. That should not have been.
Well, do you think they probably tried dogs first draft and the focus groups were having none of it?
Oh,
and then
like,
they go, let's switch it to cats.
We can only be in love with dogs.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No,
this is true.
You cannot eat them.
But in the movies back then, in the 90s, you could catch a cat on fire, throw it into a Christmas tree. It was just have a row in the in the background for a laugh.
Yeah. And a record scratch.
Fahim, aside from your aeronautics job, what's the worst job Do you have a high school job or a part-time job? Did we talk about this already?
Last time it was an hour talking about air fryers, I think, which I've gotten one, by the way.
Oh, nice. Okay, because I was going to talk about air fryers, but we already covered it. That's good. Yeah.
If we covered it, I mean, we can dip a little into it if there's highlights or anything.
I think I covered everything, yeah, probably, that needs to be. Yeah, I spread the gospel of air fryers.
You are the Oprah of air fryers.
Yeah, except I don't give them to people. I just say, get one with your own money.
Yeah,
get your own.
I go, you can buy an air fryer. You can buy it. Everyone, look under your chairs. There's air.
There's an Amazon link under your chair. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Do it.
Maybe you didn't have one of those bad jobs because you went from engineer to comedian, right? Or what did you do?
Nah, but I would have like little summer jobs. Sure. Yeah, one sucked. I was like helping some guy like with like odd jobs around his business. And so it was like a lot of manual labor, like lifting a bunch of newspapers one time for him. And I'm like a tiny kid. Like I kind of grew late, so it was a lot of work. And then he had me clear out bees in the back.
What?
He gave me some spray and there's like sticker bushes. And then he's like, yeah, can you just like clear out these bushes? And there were so many bees. Like that, I think I quit after that day.
Yeah.
This isn't worth it.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
What a terrible
assistant. He's like, I'll have the child do it.
Can you get rid of these rattlesnakes after you do the bees?
You have tinier wrists. That'll be, I'm like, oh, how does that make sense? You have tiny wrists. Get rid of these snakes. So, yeah, that kind of sucked.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
I worked at Domino's for 30 minutes.
One delivery?
What's funny is when you get... So, it was training, but it's all on a computer. So, I'm, like, learning how to make pizzas on a computer. They probably bought some software. Like, train your employees on the computer. Yeah, so I'm making like half ground beef pizzas on a computer, like clicking buttons and stuff. Like it's the worst video game in the world. So I'm doing that for 30 minutes. And then I find out that I got a job at Safeco Insurance, which is like a cubicle, like a way better job.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do that. I'm not going to make pizzas. So I didn't even pick up my check because it was like so little money.
Yeah, yeah.
So I pretty much just cosplayed as a Domino's employee for 30 minutes.
You're like, now I know how to do that just in case. Like you just have it in your
pocket. Like Domino's is going to call the insurance company and be like, hey, we thought you should know we walked out mid pie.
Yeah.
I'm okay. You're not.
Stop headhunting our guys.
Yeah. So nothing too terrible. What about you? You ever have like a terrible one?
I did a thing where when I was like 12, the lady up the street hired me to feed her horses after school, which I was like, dream come true. But I had to not just feed them, but clean out their stalls. And they had been standing in their stalls all day. So it was like 4 o'clock. So I would have to bridle them, take off an electric, electric thing so that they wouldn't like try to push against the door. And they were really big horses. Yeah. And then I would open the door and then they would like run a little bit because they knew I wasn't in charge really. I was a fucking 12-year-old girl. And it was so... looking back, wildly dangerous.
Yeah.
And it like improper. And she was paying me like $5 a week or something like that. And then one day I went there and the fence was all fucked up. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. And I just went back home because I was like, that was the extent of my problem solving ability was like, well, I can't deal with an electric fence. So goodbye. And then she called and was screaming at me. And then my mom was just like, yes. Janice, that's enough of this. Like, we're done. Like, whatever. Where I think my parents were like, oh, yeah, you should go try to work and see what having a job is like.
Build some character. Yes.
Meanwhile, I'm like running after thoroughbred horses and all this shit where it was just like so over the top. I should not have been in charge of those horses.
Yeah.
You could have got Abraham Lincoln, you know?
What happened to him?
Didn't he get kicked in the head by a horse?
Did he?
Am I making up history?
He was so good at politics.
It's people don't remember it because it got overshadowed by the getting shot in the theater thing.
You're right.
That's true.
Yeah.
But he did chop down that cherry tree. I know. I know.
What was your worst job, Chris?
I think it has to be delivering, because on paper it sounded good. I was going to go door to door and deliver coupon books and you got a percentage. It was always some sales job.
Oh, but I remember those. Yeah, those coupon books.
Yeah, it was called Serendipity Ventures. And the first time I got picked up, the girl was just chain smoking. We had to stop at a bar. These guys were fighting, and they were my coworkers, adult men. I was like 15. They got in the car. One of them had a bloody nose. And then we drove to a part of town that I'd never been to, that where people want savings. So it was like a mobile park, and they, we just got dropped off until the sun went down, and I'm with two drunk adult men. It was like that. These, all of the jobs we're talking about are very dangerous. The fact I didn't get kidnapped. These men were nice to me, by the way. They weren't like, they're like, sorry you had to see that. We're friends and we were fighting. Like, they treated me like a kid.
About?
But I can't believe I that was like the 90s. You just get dropped off somewhere and go door to door. Dogs bit me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I learned nothing, and I wasn't good at it. I brought a friend in that was like, he's like, oh, can I try? Can you get me a job? And he was like charismatic, and all my friends, their moms love this kid. And he made hundreds of dollars. He went
in sales, man. Like if you have that gene or gear, like you can make so much money.
Yeah. And I it was weird. It took me several jobs, knives, all the sales jobs you get before you're in college. And I'm like, okay, I'm not good at this. I'm not good at selling my soul for a product. One time he's named Mike. I was like, we were supposed to meet. He's like, yeah, this family invited me in. They were having a party and I ate a bunch of chicken and pizza. I'm like, you got invited into a house? It was like partying with adults. He had drank some beers.
No.
They invited him in. He had sex. No, I'm kidding.
With the family, like that Netflix documentary.
And the chicken.
What is that Netflix show? It's about like the guy who had sex with the entire family, right?
Oh, wait.
The neighbor one where he was the neighbor and then he ended up kidnapping the one girl.
Yeah. And they're not mad at him. And like he ended up having sex with the wife and then the husband. Oh. It's like crazy.
Man,
it's
he must be great in the sack.
Oh, it's so gross.
Well, I want to take his seminar. You know, you can go to pickup artists, but they only teach you how to pick up women. I want to know how to fuck an entire family.
Yeah.
When you see that guy, it's like that idea that this was any kind of a like, that it's a reveal of any kind, that he's a bizarre and creepy pervert. It's just like, if you moved into a house and he came over and was like, hey, what's up? I'm your across the street neighbor. You would immediately sell that house. The creepiness is coming off of him in waves. So I don't know what was going on in that family, that they were just like, well, let's see. Let's just give him a chance.
Yeah.
Right.
Insane.
It's what's good with grandma is good with all of us.
Yeah, that's another gear. Like, I'll see all these cult documentaries too. And part of me is like, oh, yeah, what is this guy? He has something. There's something to be learned there. You know, it keeps on happening over and over again. Like, the way they talk to people, they're like,
I think it's like extreme eye contact. I think it's a thing that most people are so uncomfortable doing, where it's like, if you lock in on someone and you act like you love looking at them, they'll fucking do anything you want. I think it's a classic trick.
I found when I'm trying to get someone to do something I know they don't want to do, I don't blink and I look at one eye. I learned this from Michael Caine. It's an acting thing.
Oh, really?
You just look at one eye and not both eyes. A lot of people dart around. A lot of people blink. If you look at one eye, you can get them to do all types of sex. You can get them to buy knives.
Coupon after coupon.
Oh, so many coupon books. Yeah.
What if you get both after you're done having sex? You go, want some knives?
And then you get a coupon for next time. The idea of selling coupon books sounds like it's from 1942. Like
I know.
That pre-internet
shit. My God,
you're
right.
Where it's like, before the internet, there was stuff going on that like went unchecked or was assumed. Yeah. Like when I first moved out for college, I remember opening someone knocking on the door and me like, I wonder who's at the door. Opening the door, it's some dude, and he begins to pitch me buying magazine subscriptions.
Right.
And of course he was a charismatic type. I signed up for like 3 years of Vogue or some shit that I didn't even want.
Yeah.
And didn't have the money to buy.
I've done that a lot.
Very like just that was standard. You would open the door if someone knocked on it. And
like,
then
I had to. It's a social contract.
I mean, I agreed by having a door. Uh-huh. Just the weirdest, like difference.
Yeah, especially because now if someone knocks on the door, I just laugh out loud and keep sitting there. It's like, who the fuck? No. Okay, yeah, murderer. There's a time you think traveler I've never outside. Seen a movie? Yeah, that is so, but I don't know how, because here was my opening pitch. One of the coupons was for $10 off of an oil change. That I remember. The book itself was $12 to purchase. So I would just open it. I'm like, here's most of your money right here. Everyone needs an oil change. This is $10 off. You can just use one, this Dairy Queen coupon or one other coupon. You got your $12 back. Okay, do you want one? They're like, get them. And that's when they'd sick their dog on me. I can't believe I didn't sell them hand over fist.
Hey, I mean, that logic checks out for me.
I'd yeah.
Be like, okay, yeah, all right. At most, $2 I'm paying for this coupon book.
It's because I mean,
you're naturally good at math. You know, there's a lot of people that would be very challenged by that opening, that opening gambit. We're just like, I would be like, what?
Yeah.
Wait, look how thick these pages are. This is quality stock. Just totally
it's
the wrong thing.
Practically cardstock.
I remember when I moved to, it's just funny how it's so antiquated coupon books. Like that was a deep memory that I totally forgot about coupon books because I used to sell them part of middle school too, you know?
For baseball.
But I remember when I moved to LA, there wasn't GPS. Like I got like the Thomas guide.
Oh, yes. Of course.
So I remember I would get lost because they always close freeways here in LA, which is not a thing. And in Washington, you know, like you go home the same way every time and it's fine. But here they'll close the 710, they'll close the 405, they'll close. And I'm not from here. So I'm just like, fuck, I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
And I would have to pull the car over and it would be in my trunk, this Thomas guide, open up the Thomas guide, go C3 to whatever, and then find out where I am.
Yeah. You had to find the page. Then you had to find, it was like, there was like several factors. You had to go to a page, then you had to follow the grid, then you find where you are. And after that information, I don't remember how you would then have to look up the grid coordinates of your destination. And then what? Get a highlighter, all while driving.
You're memorizing streets above and below the address. So you're like, well, if I turn here and I suddenly see Adeline, okay, then I'm close. Like you're.
Yeah, it's insane. You're,
well, even, you know, as we're talking about this, just the act of asking someone for directions doesn't exist anymore.
No.
And it doesn't feel that long ago. Like, that used to be such a big thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, stop at a gas station. How do I get to the 405? Or how do I get to the south?
That was part of a gas station worker's job.
Erased.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. That and handing out a dirty spoon connected to a key.
That and throwing an oily rag over his shoulder as he begins to gesture southward or wherever you're going.
I wanted to do a sketch for like Law and Order or something where they go like they go into a bar to ask about a murder and the bartender just he has busy work that doesn't make sense. You know, he's just like polishing a beer can. Like he's just like a nervous actor and doesn't know how to do natural things.
He has a table saw. He's resurfacing the wood.
He's just stacking the cans. You know, he's like, yeah, she used to come around here sometimes. They're like, cut. No one does that. No one would do that. Do what bartenders would do.
Bartenders make beer towers. Sorry.
We were doing the same joke at the same time.
Really?
Yeah, he's just like twirling the rag the whole time while talking about what the girl was doing.
Picking at his skin until it bleeds. Sir, that's more disturbing.
That's bar back behavior.
Yeah, they go, we can't recast him. We're in too deep. We need to move. We're losing daylight. Just work with him. Work with the actor. Hey, buddy, I know you're nervous, but it's okay. Just maybe just don't do anything with your hands this time. Just...
Yeah, I want to know what Eric Stoltz did on that day on Back to the Future where they had shot like a third of the movie and then he chewed it so hard one day that they're like, we got to reshoot this with someone else.
That's so interesting, though, because like he's a good actor. But
he's great.
Yes.
He's great.
So, I mean, was it just that they kept on filming and they go, okay, it's just not gelling for the vibe that we want for
this?
That's
exactly what they always say. There's never anything. I'm the first one to say anything bad about Eric Stoltz. I can't believe I even did it. It's just comedically, his sensibilities did not match hilarious Michael J. Fox, who was in a sitcom already.
Who was the perfect person. He was perfect.
But it is interesting that it was late in life that I actually saw, because on YouTube, you can look at scenes with Eric Stoltz. Like,
is it a completely different movie?
It's just memorable scene. Yeah, he's stone-faced and dramatic, and the music is different. It's an entirely different movie.
Would they tell him to like lighten up or something, or do a comedic twist on it, or did he have his own interpretation?
It had to be. Like, I remember they're having the clock tower conversation in Doc Brown's house, and he so dramatically is realizing that the clock, like, that it's too high stakes. It's not as playful. It was like the clock tower realization. You can.
But this is the thing. This is what I'm talking about, where how hard acting is, because you're seeing some takes, but like we probably did 40,
right,
where it's like, this is my funny version.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll be less funny. You know what I mean? Or depending on how they're directing him, where it's like, you're, as an actor, you're just expected to just keep doing it over and over in different ways.
Yeah.
I'm still amazed by that. I always thought I wanted to like be an actress, and I was so wrong. Like when I finally did it, I was just like, what do you mean again? I did it. Like,
I nailed it. You get one take out of me.
I'm an automatic one take
wonder. I do enjoy it. It is a great way to get health insurance too. But yeah, it once you get, like, you can watch Star Wars auditions and watch, you can see Mark Hamill nail an audition so hard. He's better than he is in the movie at acting. He nailed, that's why he got, you see all these other well-known actors and their same audition. I do a lot of YouTubing, you guys, and then I talk about it.
You love it.
But he's so good in his audition that's like, oh, of course he got it. Not as good in the, I'm a big fan of Mark Hamill's auditioning.
Yeah, auditioning is a different art form unto itself. Yeah. Some people can just kill auditions, but then they're not as great in the actual thing. Yeah.
Like you can see Kurt Russell audition to be Luke Skywalker, and it just didn't nail that audition, but he would have been great
interesting.
Too. You know? Yeah.
Wow, that's out there? You can see Kurt Russell audition?
Yeah, I go down weird wormholes. If
that'd
it's
be
not
funny
police
if, like, no,
interviews.
I asked him to audition in person at current age.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch, and you can learn from them.
Yeah, there's those Office auditions. Those are on YouTube. And then I think Steve Carell's audition for Anchorman on YouTube is pretty great.
Man, that was good.
Yeah.
I had an audition once. I'm going to tell you the story of my proudest but failed audition. Is I got a call on a Saturday for someone saying they were from casting from Seinfeld calling me in for an audition. And I go, shut up, and then hung up the phone. And then they call back. They're like, no, we're not joking or whatever. And I'm like, oh, sorry. I could have sworn you were like a friend. Like, I go, it's Saturday. And they're like, I know we had a thing and whatever. So we're bringing people in. It's one line or whatever.
You really said shut up and hung up?
Yes. Because it was like Seinfeld on a Saturday. It is the biggest show. It was probably 1996 or something like that. Yeah. It was like anyone's dream. Yeah. So then I go in and literally it's two lines. And it's like when Elaine, it's like another company party. And she's the one that danced weird last time. And so I'm like a cater waiter. And I offer her taquitos and then say, are you the one that danced weird last time? Essentially was the, it's two lines. I get there. It's filled with people. And it's all like, oh, that's, I recognize them from going to a show at the Groundlings. Like there's all these people there to do that.
Yeah.
The two line part.
Right.
I'm like, fuck, man, this is like intense. And it was that kind of thing where I was like, I can't care about this because there's no way I'm going to get it. So whatever. Walk in. It's a gigantic room. Like, you know how normally you go in, it's an office size room. This room was this size of, no joke, like 10 offices put together. And there was a couch all the way around the outside. And then Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld are sitting like over here. And then there's like, it seemed like every writer, like they were just doing a
big
group.
I'm already scared.
Right?
That's so scary. Yeah.
So I walk in, I'm like, man, this is like, and I'm thinking almost like normally I would have been out of my mind, but it was all so surreal that I was just like, this is crazy. And so then I get this idea right at the last second before they're like, are you ready to go? I'm like, oh, I'm going to say taquitos with an accent. So they do the cue line or whatever it is. And then I go, taquito. And the entire room goes, like, erupts. And then I just am looking around like, fuck yeah, like, I just did it or whatever. And then the casting person says the next line and I completely blank on the actual line matters of like, aren't you the lady that danced weird lips? So that I was like, and I was
did
like,
did you just
I was
say
out of
taquitos
character.
Again? That's what I would have done.
Literally, it was just like, I had to look at the paper say the next line. Oh. And then I was just like, thanks, bye. And it was
I knew
I didn't get it. But then it was that thing of like, I don't mean to brag or tell that story to brag or whatever, because I always ate shit in every audition I went to. But it was like this one time where I was like, oh, maybe I get what I'm supposed to be doing here. Like bring a little something to the, whatever. And then just immediately like can't get over the just, it's like, that was my accomplishment. I'm not acting. This was like, I can't not take it all. It's so embarrassing.
I'm mad.
That's the stand-up in you. Because like you're sitting in the pocket of the laugh and just,
right?
You're you. You're like, I did that. And then you're like, oh yeah, hold on, I have to act. Yeah.
Oh, the point of the scene. Yeah. Oh, are you the lady that danced? And I'm sure I said it like so flat and boring. Where it's like, are you the lady that danced weird last year? Thank you.
We always forget what we're going to close on. That happens all the time. It sucks though, because I can totally see you, 90s Karen, delivering that line all deadpan, and you would have been great. You really screwed the pooch, the husky. You
this
screwed
close.
The Washington Husky on that one.
Every single time.
I kind of want to watch that episode and just see who got it
yeah.
and what they did. Be like, oh, now I know why they got it. They really brought some zest to it.
Yeah, I can't believe it was a young Judi Dench.
Yeah, for real. It's like someone, it's like, oh, Charlize Theron got her start on Seinfeld? Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, God, that would be so
there frustrating. Is a lot of that, though. You watch the show and like Terry Hatch or like all these guest stars, you know?
Yeah.
And then like Daphne on Frasier. Like, yeah, they all kind of have little guest stars on that show.
Yeah, one of the first times opening for a comic, his name was John Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like an umbrella salesman on Seinfeld. And I'd seen that episode so many times. And I had to share a condo with him in Boise. It's when there used to be these comedy condos and you just have a roommate for 4 days. Five. I think it was Tuesday through Sunday. And I'm like, oh my God, it's the umbrella guy from Seinfeld. I could never let it go. I never let him be a person. He was just a TV.
I mean, how did he treat it? Did he just treat it like a thing that came and went? Or did he revel in it? Like, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it was in his intro, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was proud of it. And he was very funny. He made me laugh. I miss that guy. I miss being his roommate. But you know how I hold salesmen in such a high regard.
To yes,
me,
and jugglers.
He was a successful umbrella salesman.
What if he juggled the umbrellas? That would have put him in another league.
No one does more than five. Six? What in the? Seven? I just faint. God, they're lucky I wasn't unconscious in that car. The other passengers.
Was the juggling guy in the crosswalk, do you think he's working Los Angeles as a whole? Or do you think he's just in that area?
He seemed like he had a very bad year. And his limp, I don't think, was fully an affectation. He, in a past life, was an amazing juggler. And that's why it got very emotional about it. But it seems like he's rediscovered it.
I hope he's taking that show on the road. You can't have that for one intersection.
He was literally
that
on the road, Fahim. I'm sorry.
I want multiple roads, though. I don't want a single road. I mean, that talent, you got to go to different intersections.
Yeah. He's got to go to the Walk of Fame, and he's got to get over by that really dirty SpongeBob SquarePants guy.
Yeah.
Because I want to be his agent and be like, I'm gonna get you to the Sunset Strip.
I wished I was an agent in that moment. I was like,
I'm talking to Santa Monica Boulevard.
I saw
they're interested.
Yeah. And you didn't know I was watching, but I was. I loved the limp in the beginning. He really did pretend. He's like, oh, I'm going to act extra forlorn. Like he was really dragging his leg.
Yeah,
and one of his pant legs was ripped open. And then he was amazing. And he was having fun and he smiled. And I was like, oh, look at him. He's like a happy. It was really I was looking around and everyone's like, everyone in their car was freaking out.
It's kind of the pinnacle of street performance because there's a shot clock. You know, it's a high stakes environment. There's cars and such.
You're right. Yeah.
It's a captive audience.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing.
It was great. I loved
it. So was it 30 seconds? How long did he have?
It was sort of a long light. I don't know how he did that part, but it's because it was where Alvarado meets Glenn. It was like you had to wait for 5 different streets to intersect. It wasn't just.
So how many shows do you think he does per hour? Like, how many times does that crosswalk come on?
That's something I want to know too. If he just stepped to this, because he was juggled on, he was juggling on the corner. And then once the cars stop, I guess he does the limp. And he was dragging like a milk crate. So everyone's like, oh, brother, this is going to take a while. Yeah. They don't realize they're about to see the best show on earth.
I feel like maybe we should pitch this show. It's sort of like America's Got Talent, but it's at crosswalks. And everyone has 30 seconds to put on the grandest show, whatever they have. And then the people in the cars vote, you know, they decide.
Yeah. And if they don't get it, you execute them, right?
Then you run them over. You run them over.
Yeah, it's like it should be near a freeway exit so everyone has road rage. Yeah. So they're not automatically going to love it. They're probably
not gonna love it.
The literal toughest audience there could
be.
Yeah, an angry audience. Yeah, like 30 seconds.
Like the time I was doing morning radio in Austin, they got a guy that would win Nickelback tickets if we could make him laugh. And he was so angry and he came in there ready to not laugh. And it's like, this isn't gonna.
Wait, did he not want the tickets?
He really and I've talked about this before, so I'm repeating.
No, wait, you mean, Chris, if he didn't laugh, you would try to make him laugh. He didn't, he would win Nickelback tickets, right?
I'm sorry. No, I think they are going to give them to him anyway. But the object of the game was he gets free Nickelback tickets unless, against his will, we make him laugh, which is an impossibility, especially a guy who called in and said on the phone, I love Nickelback so much, I named my horse Nickelback. Which actually is a pretty good, it's a better horse name than a rock
band. It actually is a great horse name.
Yeah. Wow.
I never realized that until now. I love the band.
Yeah. Well, I've thought about it a few times because I disliked the name Seabiscuit so much, I came with a list of betters. But yeah, he did not laugh, and I think he enjoyed Nickelback, and I was scarred for life. It was awful.
Hey, everyone won, right?
Yeah. But yeah.
That's right.
I think that I love the show where it's like you have a street corner, but then you're using people. I guess that's a bad.
No,
part
wait.
Of
why
that
are
show.
They being? They're voluntarily competing.
They love it. Yeah,
they love it. They live
it's
for
Los
it.
Angeles.
They live to juggle. Exactly. Come on.
Yeah, and you don't have to rent a theater, and hire Nick Cannon and all that stuff.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and it's for the people. There's no artifice of all this production. It is. It's like the podcasting of talent shows, you know? Yeah. It's real. It's gritty.
I like it. And I'd like
it's in your face.
It's in your face. Yeah, you're commuting. You can't get away from it.
Have you ever pitched a show about, oh, here's the premise. It's a aeronautical engineer who is funny in the office. And have you ever pitched that?
No. Yeah, no.
Do you mind if I do?
Just to take my life story. You're like, so when you're growing up an Afghan boy, growing up in Seattle.
It was hard. I'll admit it, it was hard.
Yeah. And then I got into engineering. And,
I turned to math.
You just wanted to get away from the grunge music scene. Where's the time gone? We were already, was an episode.
We have kept you for a long time.
I did want to ask, though, because I started listening to your dance party podcast.
He-Man or Dance Hour?
Because I don't see another name on it. Are you talking to yourself? Because the other voice sounds like you.
Oh, no. It's my buddy, Ollie Baluch.
Did you know you have very, very similar voices?
I did not know, but he's Afghan as well. So maybe it's
Hey, you know, I'm not dipping my toe.
I'm
just saying I never saw a photo.
I mean, you sound different. Did I say the same?
I meant different.
Yeah,
I just like the idea of, and how difficult it would be to record both sides of a podcast as one person. Because you're like, I'm like, after there was enough banter, I'm like, okay, there's no way this is two people.
Yeah, this is top level talent. If he's doing a podcast with himself, a recorded.
That means there's two guys that talented in this world. They have to both be him.
Yeah, I was doing it for a bit and then I got the writing job. So I wasn't able, your time is less. So I stopped doing it, but I'm bringing it back. So I'm
what
doing
do you,
it
yeah,
with the,
Concluding, is there anything you want to promote, like writing jobs or tours?
No, I mean, I'm done with the writing job. Yeah, I'm on tour. So if you go to fahimanwar.com, you'll see what cities I'm doing. I'm doing Irvine this week and then Phoenix, and then I'll be in New York and Chicago.
Terrific.
Some other places. So yeah, just check out that. I guess my IG, fahimanwar, I put stand-up clips up there. And then the podcast I'm starting up again. So that's awesome. My YouTube channel where the special is as well. Just fahimanwar.
Nice.
Yeah. If you are on, look at his website. And if you live in LA, he's often at the Comedy Store and he's very good. And his special takes place in all three rooms at the Comedy Store. And it's very funny. If you like jokes.
Thanks, man.
One of the great.
If you like well-written jokes.
Thanks for being here with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me as always, guys.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN AR. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Mixed by Edson Choi.
Our talent booker is Patrick Kottner.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Honk, honk. We used to honk the horn, Fahim.
I get it.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.